Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Kevin, guess what?
What, Rob?
We now have over 50 iTunes reviews.
Huzzah!
Huzzah, indeed! Oh. We are climbing those iTunes rating charts.
That's amazing. Yeah. How do we climb even higher?
Can you take me high enough? Little Rock of Ages for you.
Do you know I like that you took it up so high too? You didn't even, you like went right to the tenor place.
I was going
to
do
No Robert Goulet.
Like, no. Can you take me high enough?
Thanks for coming out tonight.
Ooh, and my falsetto there.
Thank you.
And a little Sergio Frankie?
Yeah, a little Sergio.
It's never over. Much like the 24-hour buffet down in the lobby of the Dunes Casino. Me and Sid the Caesar. Tonight's only at the Mirage. Sorry. Well, lovely listeners, this is where you come in. This is how we're going to climb those iTunes rating charts.
That's right. Lovely listeners, if you love us, would you go to iTunes, click on the iTunes store, search for Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
Then click on Ratings and Reviews. Under the Customer Reviews, click Write a Review. Then let us know what you think from 1 to 5 stars.
That's right. And you can leave comments, too, like Kevin Thomas is a god.
Or, Rob, who the hell is Hervé Villechaize?
Who is Hervé Villa? I fell for it again.
You fell for it.
That wasn't even the script.
The man has never done one musical in his entire life, and he gets mentioned more than Stephen
Sondheim.
Right,
but I love him from James the Bond. Okay, anyway.
Oh, yes.
Guys, help us out.
Please. Thanks, everyone.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Curtain, and make sure to join our Facebook page at Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
And go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Broadway Curtain Podcast. Plus, you can always listen to our podcasts on Broadway World and Stitcher.
Ooh. Today's guest is one of the most respected actors working in the industry. His career has included plays, musicals, film, television. He is as comfortable bringing life to the words of Shakespeare and Chekhov as he is with the words of Neil Simon or August Wilson.
Most of our listeners would recognize his powerful voice from the original cast recordings of Caroline or Change, which, yes, listeners, you know, is one of my all-time favorites, one of my all-time favorite shows. And yes, I am excited that he's here right now. And The Life, for which he won a Tony Award.
To tell us what it was like to work with Cy Coleman, Jeanine Tesori, George Wolfe, and what it's like to be the head of the Cooper acting dynasty, here is Chuck Cooper.
Wow.
Welcome.
That is an intro, man.
Yeah, we're excited.
Man,
it is a life, though, Char.
My goodness. Yeah, it has. It is unfurled far faster than I would ever have imagined, but yeah, here we are. It looks like I might have a career.
I think so. I think it's done. I think you've done pretty well.
I'm thinking.
I think you're
starting to. It's starting to sink in.
Does it ever really? I mean, do you ever look back and say, "Oh my gosh, like this is I did it," you know, or I'm doing it, or?
Mostly, what happens is I just live in this wash of gratefulness that I am here and. Yeah. And all of the wonderful things that I'm living right this second. You know, like this interview. I mean, this is like, well, this is wild.
You know. We have wanted you for the longest time. Yeah. When we started the podcast about a year ago, and you were one of the first names on the list.
We made a list of people we wanted,
Oh, that's, man. Yeah. Okay, stop it. You're going to give me the big head.
Okay. So originally from Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland.
That's where I went to college,
Where'd you go to Cleveland?
Baldwin-Wallace.
Baldwin-Wallace.
Yeah, on the west side.
Okay.
Yeah. Where are you from, Cleveland?
On the east side. Cleveland is very segregated. There is black people on the east side and white people on the west side.
Yeah.
So you didn't even have to tell me what side you was on.
Lakewood,
Right?
Yeah.
It's like that there. Yeah. It's weird. But yeah, so me, Eastside John Adams High School, then went to Heights High School in Cleveland Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And did you find an interest in theater even then in high school?
I tell people that I kind of grew up in the theater because my father was an actor at Caramu House in Cleveland, Ohio.
Major theater. Yeah.
It's called Caramu. Mm-hmm.
Caramu.
Caramu House.
Yeah.
It is one of the oldest oldest community theaters in the country.
Yeah.
And it is a part of a settlement house, which was the first integrated settlement house in the country.
Wow.
And it has quite a history and legacy about it. And my father acted there in productions in their community theater pieces. And so I went the settlement house has a nursery school, and I went to nursery school there.
Oh my gosh.
My godmother was a nursery school teacher, and my father, yes, I got in for free or whatever. And so I went to school. I went to nursery school in the theater.
And he's a singer. I mean, he sang with the Robert Shaw Chorale, right?
Boy, you did your homework.
Well, I know. I see things and I take note. Well, because that's kind of epic. I mean, the Robert Shaw Chorale is like a major singing group.
Major.
And classic, too. Like, like classical music, too.
My treasured music are the choral pieces that he sang with that chorale that in my library.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, my father sang with Robert Shaw, went down to sing with Pablo Casals and Festival Casals. Oh, and he had a gorgeous voice. All the guys, it was mostly guys, his brothers, only had uncles.
Yeah.
But except for my Aunt Rosie. Forgot your Aunt Rosie. I'm sorry. They all sang. Everybody in our family sang. Huh. And when you go to a family reunion, you got to bring it.
Yeah,
I see that. When you go to family reunions, it's a big sing-along. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to sing on that.
Back in the day, we haven't had one in a long time, too long. But when I was coming up, we had them all the time. And
what's your favorite type of music to listen to? Back then, when you were growing up.
Back then when I was growing up.
Famous singers.
It was all the Motown. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was like, a cornucopia of wonderfulness.
Yeah.
But then I also got I got Sarah Vaughan, I got Ella, I got Tony Bennett and Mel Torme, and of course Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh yeah.
The great Sammy Davis
the
Jr.
The great all just a moment of silence. That's for Sammy.
Yeah. I like that.
One of the best. Oh, one of the best to see live, and left us far too young.
Oh my God!
Far too young.
Quadruple 70 threat. I mean, there's nothing he couldn't do.
Yeah. Oh, truly. Yeah. And dedicated. We talked to Charles Strauss about him, and when he did Golden Boy, he stayed with it for years. I mean, he did it in the United States, did it in London. That's dedication.
Yeah. Look on YouTube and hear any of his renditions of anything. Old Man River. I Gotta Be Me. Of anything. Nobody styles a song like him. Nobody.
Perfection.
Yeah,
really perfection.
Yeah.
Were you doing shows when you were in high school?
I didn't do them in high school, although I worked at Kane Park.
I did too.
You get out of here.
Shut up.
Stop it immediately.
I did. I was Tony in West Side Story.
What's Kane Park?
Kane Park is this big outdoor theater in Cleveland Heights.
Yeah, amphitheaters. It's huge. It's
like
huge.
One of those like outdoor places that where there's like a cover. Well, I don't know if there's a cover then. And they've got that big stage.
Well, you played Tony. I squeegeed the deck when it was wet.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Right. That's insane.
That's wild.
Okay, so you worked at Kane Park.
Worked at Kane Park and was around all the theater shows and whatnot. And I had friends who were in theater. I just never thought of doing it. You know, people did it. I would watch, and I just kind of passively do-de-do-de-do'd through much of my life.
Not according to your resume, but yes.
But I just kind of, was watching them. And then I went to college. And I was like, I knew I had to do something fun. Okay. I was real clear about that because my father hated his job. Really hated it.
What was his job?
He worked for United Airlines. He was a SkyCap or porter, bags, service.
Yeah.
And Lord have mercy, he hated them fucking Peckerwoods.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they dogged him bad.
Yeah.
My father got dog bagged anyway. You know, well. He was a black man in America, so
in a certain time period too.
Right. So he, but the fringe benefit of that job though, which was amazing, is I got to travel because I got passes.
Yeah,
and he got to travel too. Saw a lot of shit. Traveling. And traveling is the best education I think there is.
So.
It's the best. But so I went away to college,
which was
Ohio University, mm-hmm. and knew I had to have fun because my father hated his job. And get to freshman orientation, and I'm like, I think I'll be a disc jockey. Yeah. Because you could play records all day, yeah. And then that would be fun, right? Yeah. So, but I get to freshman orientation and have a little questionnaire, you know, what are your interests? And I said, oh, I sang in the choir in high school and la, la, la. And my advisor just happened to be Stan, I think his last name is Lee, who was the lighting designer in the School of Theater. Little did I know that as many students as they steer towards their department, they get funded for. But nevertheless, he gently steered me to the theater department. Kicked me over there. He's like, kicked me into the theater department, where I was like, the freshman track was like, you know, movement 101, voice 101. I'm like, this is cool. I can do this. Yeah. This is easy. Yeah. I don't have to read anything. He's like, really? No, it's terrible. Yeah. But it was easy. It was fun.
Yeah. So what you wanted.
Yeah. And so I got into the theater track, and I didn't suck.
Yeah.
I kept not sucking.
Yeah.
And so audition, they called me brash. Because, you know, the good thing was I didn't know what a good program it was. I had no fucking clue. I was just dodie doing dodie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I dodie dodie doed into that and got in, and they trained me, or they gave me the soil from which my training and experience would grow.
Yeah.
And so I'm very grateful for that. And then I moved to New York. I had a whole slew of classmates that had gone before me, and this is deep. I got my equity card the first month I was here.
Huh. Wow.
I got a job like the first week I was here.
What year was that? What'd you say?
That was the bicentennial year, 76.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the first job I got was like a narrator at this like puppet show. I had a friend who I was friends with all the ladies in the dance department.
Nice.
And back in school. And when I got here, a friend, dancer friend, needed this narrator for this puppet show. Non-equity. It was a gig, but it was a gig, right? Yeah. So I was doing that. And then another friend who had gotten into the, at that point, it was called PART, Performing Arts Repertory Theater, but it is now Theater Works USA.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah, Theater Works. Yeah,
right. Charlie Hull, Jay Harnick.
Yeah.
So another upperclassman got me an audition for a PART show. This is like maybe 3 weeks in getting here. I get the job. I go out on tour in an Equity Children's Theater bam. Show.
Huh.
Yeah. Bam. Slam, bam, thank you, ma'am. Pow.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this shit is easy. No. Yeah, well, yeah. It'll smack you in the head soon enough, though. That will not last long at all.
Did you have an agent when you first got here?
When I first got here, I did not. I don't remember when I got my agent because I've only been with one agent.
Wow. You are a lucky man, Chuck
wow.
Cooper.
Wow.
That freaks people out.
Who's your agent?
My agent, now, it has morphed slightly as, you know, business has morphed. It started out, and he just passed recently.
Oh.
It started out as Monty Silver.
Wow.
Monty Silver was my first agent.
How has the audition process changed from when you first started to now?
I have finally arrived at the place I early on learned that I must seek to arrive at. And that is the point at which you can go into an audition and not give a fuck.
Wow.
And really not give a fuck.
Like you do your work, but then when you get in that room, you're like, hey, take it or leave it. You know, I'm going to do the best I can. But
right, right. And take it or leave it even has that has like a little fever on it. It's not even that. It's like, this is my gift, and this is what I have. This is what I do. And sometimes we meet, and sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And just to let it be, and mostly, and to have fun.
Yeah.
Which is why I started.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And when I do that, when I don't give a fuck, mm-hmm. and when I'm just having fun and playing, I do really well.
Yeah.
And the moment I start thinking about shit, uh-huh. it goes right down the toilet.
That's great advice.
That's
for all young
advice.
Performers, too.
How long do you think it took you to learn that lesson?
75 years.
Okay.
That's the answer I've heard all day.
I love that. Fair.
So let's talk about when you were starting out, and I think you had already covered this, but you were open to all sorts of different types of storytelling.
Yeah. 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 I knew that the more hatch you were, the better. I was curious about different things, and luckily, different things came to me. And I guess I had some range to handle it. And where I didn't, I vigorously went about learning. I remember I did my – let me think about this. It wasn't my first Shakespeare. I had done a Shakespeare. I had done Caliban and the Tempest at the Alliance, I think, before I got this gig. And I got Tellus of Phidias and Coriolanus, directed by John Hirsch.
Oh.
And I don't know that I could not have, because I didn't have enough experience, professional experience in the classics, to think that I had, I knew what I was doing. So I was there very much trying to be present and give what I had. Dakin Matthews was in the company.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Byron Jennings was Coriolanus.
Okay. So there's you could learn a little there, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone could.
This was my masterclass.
Yeah.
In how to do Shakespeare. John Hirsch. Byron Jennings. Mm-hmm. Dakin Matthews. Mm-hmm. So I just sat there like a sponge and just listened. And I can remember sessions with John where we would go through my text word by word. And I never had so much fun in my life. He taught me how to mine the text, how to scrub it, how to excoriate it, how to mold and knead it. And it has held me in good stead for the breadth of the work that I have done, I would say. Because there are inherent musical tools hidden in there, and there are tools to explicate and understand the drama and just to grow more sensitive to the human condition. And I don't know. I'm going on.
No, it's
great.
It's true. That's good. That will affect you.
One of the things that young students who are about to join this profession worry about is this word type.
Mm.
What do you feel about type? Do you like to be typed? Do you feel like you own your type? Is it something that...
Now, that is something I believe outside of my journey through it that has changed greatly that I may not be completely up on. Because the... what they are asking of these young people now is completely different than what was asked of me as a young person coming up. Mm. Just your social. But my daughter told me that the other day they wanted to know how many likes she had.
Wait. In an audition?
Yes. Yes.
No, we're talking about Lily, who is a very successful career. Spring Awakening, Alphabet.
I mean, this was like a little while back, but it was after Spring Awakening. It was like they asked her how many likes.
Drop my microphone. That is insane.
You know what I
mean?
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have. I got 11. I got 11 to 12 likes.
Yeah.
She's plowing through it.
Oh, yeah.
But I you know, that's one I got to say, I don't know, babe. You know, I can help her in other places. But,
yeah, right.
You know.
What was the when you're so you're in New York City and you're plugging away, you come back from your theater works tour, when or your part tour.
Mm-hmm.
When what was the first job you had where you're like, hey, it's gonna work out, like I'm, well, you know, or at least I'm glad I'm doing this, or right, this is right, in the right direction,
the next level.
You know, like yeah, exactly, like where it's like, hey, I'm really paying, I'm getting good food.
Wow,
extra guacamole,
right.
Please.
Well, that might have been I got an industrial.
Which were we've talked to a lot of people. They were very popular.
Oh,
in
yeah.
The 60s, 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you could really make a good living.
It was nice. It was like it was as nice as Broadway. Uh-huh. Or I hadn't done Broadway yet, so I can't really speak definitively on this, but it was really good.
Because it was all Broadway people doing
yes,
industrials.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
What was the industrial?
It was for Exxon.
Nice.
Exxon's a winner. Exxon's the best. Exxon is better than all the rest. Yeah.
Oh, that's his
best date. It's great.
Oh, God. That I can't remember like people who helped me in the business, but I remember that shit.
Oh man! Well, that rhyme. Okay. No. All right. Good.
Yeah.
Little oil.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you're making like I don't have a comma in my paycheck yet. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen for a while. Mm-hmm. But it was nice.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, you know, back then, $700 a week was, you know, was a lot of fucking
yeah.
money, okay? Right?
All yeah.
Right? So, like, I'm doing this industrial for Exxon, and we're traveling first class everywhere. They are flying us first class. We are staying in nice hotels with the per diem that, you know, $75 a day. You could just spend your per diem yeah. and keep the money you make.
That's right.
And that was really special. And then I may have the same thing kind of in my first national tour, which was UB.
Oh.
Again, production contract, on the road, per diem, young, single. I'd just gotten married. At UB when I went on the road, yeah. So I've been on the road and other stuff.
Tap Dance not, Kid, yeah.
But that came later. Tap Dance okay. Kid yeah. came later. Probably was like regional theaters or stuff. But I'd been on the road, children's theater, did a lot of that.
Okay,
but those are the first. That's you know that industrial the production contract where I was like I thought yeah, that was nice.
Yeah,
and you know children were coming so. That balance of it soon evaporated. That sense of opulence.
Well, yeah, work becomes a necessity in order
yeah,
to
yeah.
you know, make your life happen. And you made your Broadway debut in
Amen Corner.
Amen Corner. Yeah,
based on the James Baldwin play.
That's right.
I gotta go see this movie.
Yeah,
I'm Not Your Negro. Have you seen it yet?
My family members have.
Oh, yeah.
My wife's family has.
Yeah, we went to see it. Well, we tried to go see it, I don't know, it was a week and a half ago, my brother, my son and I. And it was sold out, but I got
to
get back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, let's get the
That's a good
out
thing.
There.
I wish it was showing more places.
I know, I do too. I'm sure it will.
I yeah.
Know it has to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we talk about Broadway debut, did you like Life on the Road?
The road is long with many a winding turn. Okay, I'll try to do that.
But it's tough.
It's something out there, man. You know, when I was young and crazy, and even
when I was. The road is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Too crazy.
It is.
It's too damn crazy. Okay?
Yep.
Very few can go out there and keep your shit together.
Mm. All of your shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, so I will say that about the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, but see a lot, travel a lot. That's good.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So let's go back to
Nothing's all one thing. Yes.
With Ruth Brown, right?
The Ruth Brown.
Yeah.
Tell us about what it's like to work with the Ruth Brown.
She was just, Ruth. She was like, somehow, you know how, she's like a She was like, you know how they say like a smallest particle of like a black hole is like so dense that it's like really, really heavy? Ruth was like that, only it was light. It was she was dense with light. And so when she would sing, it would be this illuminating thing where a note would just like just expand, keep expanding every time it came out of her mouth. She was I just watch her and see where she sang from, because people say the center or the place from which you sing can be slightly different in every person. And as I watched her sing, you could say that it was like so deep, such a familiar, deep, hurtful, loving, wonderful place of just great character and great dignity and great, there was suffering, but there was love. And she was so special. I'll never forget her, Miss Ruth Brown.
Yeah. Post some.
Yeah. Wow.
Doing your first Broadway show. Intimidated by working with this the higher level.
Again, you know, so much of my life I went through Dodi Dodi Do that I got in the show, and I was like, okay, well, this is Broadway. Let's see what this is.
Yeah,
and I'm up there with Retta Hughes and Roger Robinson and the late Keith Amos. He died shortly after that show, and Helena Joyce Wright, Helena, and so. And my big brother, Jeffrey Thompson, was like my understudy, which was like so weird. And, oh, man, that company was a great company. It was full of...
What do you like out of a director? What to you is a successful actor-director collaboration or relationship?
Where I feel safe in the room so I can play. And a person who... I feel safe with, and a person who can succinctly speak on the concept of either the given situation or the artistic goal or some aspect that falls within their purview to speak on, with clarity and eloquence, hopefully, and maybe even a little inspiration.
Can you think of any director specifically where you felt that was all achieved?
Mm-hmm. Ruben Santiago Hudson.
Mm.
Who directed you in?
Who directed me many times. And Jitney, Donna Two Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
Two Trains Running, Piano Lesson.
Piano Lesson, yeah.
Valerie Curtis Newton is definitely one. Donnie Scardino.
Ah, yeah.
Who else? Michael Blakemore.
That's a great list, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you've worked with some of the best, and they've been lucky enough to work with you, so that's a good relationship.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Let's talk a little bit about the art of being an understudy.
Ah.
Because it is an art.
I know a little something about that.
Yeah,
I know a little bit about that, okay? Because, you know, I've done a bunch of shows, but a lot of those were covers.
There was a I'm just going to say a couple shows name. Rumors.
Right.
Getting Away with Murder, the Sondheim play.
Great stories there.
Oh, I want to hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
Passion.
Right.
Someone who'll watch over me.
Right. Yeah.
And you eventually took over and someone will watch over me.
You do that. Yeah. How do you navigate that?
That is the toughest job in show business.
I think so.
And it's also the greatest training ground. Because the great thing about covering is you can steal the good shit and you can leave the other shit.
Truth. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like so cool.
Yeah.
You go, that shit? No.
No.
Nope. Oh, that's good. I like that. And that's really cool. And you get that it's the trial by fire that you're on in however long, bring it. That thing to be in the is a great trainer, you know. I'm sure it's how they get soldiers to be able to go into war over and over again, you know.
Yeah.
Once you get through it, once you face the bullets, once you do it, you can do it.
Let's talk about the first understudy job you had on Broadway, which was Rumors.
Which is Rumors, right.
Which is a funny – it's done in every high school in America, I think.
Oh, wow. That's
cool.
Yeah, well, of course. It's a great farce.
And talk about that original cast. Who did you get to –
Christine Baranski? Okay. All right. She's so sweet and so amazing. There's a scene, I don't know if it's in the play. It probably has to be in the play because she invented it. Where she's so freaked out that, you know, the farce is just going way out of control. And she turns and all of a sudden she has two cigarettes. She has a cigarette in one hand, a cigarette lit, two lit cigarettes. One in one hand, one in the other hand. And she's like trying to smoke these two cigarettes. Oh my God. It's got to be in there. Anyway, Christine Baranski and Ron and Jessica and oh my God.
You know this play?
I don't know.
Your high school didn't do it?
No, my high school didn't do plays.
Oh, really? Just the musicals?
No,
it's like
barely even.
Ron Lehman and Jessica Walters Andre Gregory. Joyce Van Patten and Dick LaTessa.
Is it Neil Simon?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like it's everybody hilarious. And their mother. The great comics.
Yeah. It's very, very funny. So I was understudying Charlie Brown.
The great Charlie Brown.
The great Charlie Brown. Who, like the MP in House of Blue Leaves, comes in at the end of the play to wrap things up.
Okay.
Which, like, only Charlie Brown can do. And so I covered his track, and I got to go on. Not much, but I did get to go on. I want to say maybe twice. But I remember the stars, there's several times that stars have been kind of funny when an understudy goes on.
Mm.
This was kind of one of those times.
Uh-oh.
Because I've done my understudy rehearsal and I'm on my little game and it's, you know, Charlie's out. I'm on. I get there and my stage manager says, Ron wants to see you in his dressing room. I think we were at the Broadhurst.
Yeah.
I think. Oh, yeah. And his dressing room was downstairs. So we had to go downstairs to Ron's dressing room. A realm I had hitherto never ventured into.
Right.
And so I go to Ron's dressing room, and he's sitting there. He's doing his thing or whatever. And he leans over me, and he, like, gives me this long look, and he just says, just give me the eyes. Yes, Mr. Lehman.
Okay.
Just give me the eyes.
Just give me the eyes.
Good pep talk.
Thank you so much. I needed that before I go on Broadway for the first time.
That wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Right. So, you know, when I went on for, I was covering James McDaniel and Someone Who'll Watch Over Me. Mm-hmm. And I went on. And Stephen Ray was then super large. You know, that was the year he was nominated for a Tony and an Oscar in the same year.
Oh, wow.
He was nominated for Crying Game and Someone Who'll Watch Over Me. And so I had my put-in rehearsal with him on stage because it was only a three-person play. Mm. And he was, redirected me from what my stage manager and you know, these were small things, but there were line readings, there was this thing that the way he wanted it to, when it to come from me. And I just remember thinking, wow, okay, I'm not sure why he needs it that way, but I can certainly be fine with giving it to him that way, and that's fine. But I want to remember this, because this, I'm feeling, is not exactly how I would like to be talking to someone who is coming into a show and into a play to work with them. And so I listened and jumped through the hoops and did whatever it was. And it was, and as I say, it was no deep thing. It was just a negation of what I thought I was bringing.
Right.
And so, you know, that's just two of the odd times. Other times it's been fun. You know, I covered five tracks in Passion.
Yeah.
I was a swinger. I swung.
Yeah.
Now that's truly the hardest gig. Because Standing By is fun. Because you know, back in the day, you could just call in.
Right.
You didn't even have to show up at the theater.
Nice.
You could just call at 7:30. Is anybody out? Nope. Okay, see ya.
Bye.
But then it got, you know, worse than that. So I'm swinging. You had to show up because anybody could be out. I'm covering at least five tracks, I'm sure. I went on for four of the five. The Soldiers.
In
Passion. And so I'm covering like two tenor tracks and three baritone tracks because you got to learn.
Yeah.
The voices.
And this is Sondheim. This is like not the easiest.
This is Sondheim with the Stephen Sondheim. And you know, right? No easy shit.
No.
It's all beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. But, you know. So I'd learn that. And then I had to learn their track, you know, what bed they moved, what chair they moved, what, you know. So I had a book for each one and la, la, la. I mean, that was like really helps you break things down. You know, if you break it down and you're having a trouble with it, that means you need to break it down some more. Mm. And if you're having trouble with it, you break it down some more until you get it.
Wow.
It's terrifying. I would be terrified.
It is one of the hardest jobs on Broadway.
You understudied too, right?
I've only understudied. I've never swung. But understudying, I relate to
But you never swung. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
never. I mean, it's so hard. I mean, it's especially a new show where might be changing stuff in rehearsals. And you're okay, now you're not moving stage left. You're moving stage right. Okay.
Yeah. You know? And nowadays with all the pneumatics, you know, you don't get a whole hell of a lot of rehearsal, you know. Maybe you put in, maybe with the elements, the lights, the costumes, and the set pieces flinging by, you know, in Passion, they had these huge fucking panels that would go, you know, on these, you know, winches from control down the basement on computer, you know, these huge panels. You in the wrong place, you get clocked. Okay.
Oof.
I mean, we, you know, you've all heard stories of, you know, folks who've had injuries, you know.
Now, let's talk about a show that fascinates us, which is Getting Away with Murder.
Which didn't.
Everyone was very excited at the time. You know,
it's the first play.
George Firth.
Whoa.
A murder mystery. That's what Sondheim loves.
Right. Wow.
And didn't it go so
well? What happened? Well, I like to dog this one. Because they dogged me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they dogged me. But, you know, maybe they didn't. You know, that's like it's easy for me to say. You, as soon as you think you can expect something, as soon as you think something's yours, you can be corrected on that. The universe will correct your ass. Go, no, that was not for you. Yeah. And so I'm doing the show. We, you know, how can I forget this name on the director's list? Jack O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
We had a great time out at the O Globe. And it was wonderful. You know, I thought, you know, it was fun. So we were going to transfer. Oh, boy, we're going to transfer. This might have been the first time that I had done an out-of-town on a show. Oh. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, I'm expecting, you know, we're back in the city. We did our run. I'm expecting, you know, I should be hearing my people. Should be hearing from their people at any time. And it never happened. And then I see the marquee goes up. They didn't have the names of the actors. The marquee went up. And I thought, what is up? So I call my agent. They make a call. They're making a change. They're going with Frankie Faison for my part because our producer, Roger Berlin, this phrase was coined, and I'll never forget it. They wanted to up the marquee ante by getting stars. They replaced Becky Baker with Christy Ebersole, and they replaced me with Frankie Faison. The rest of the company were apparently big enough stars. Terry Mann and
John Rubenstein.
John Rubenstein. I'll get a great story about that later. So I get the call, and I'm not in it. And I just went, wow, that's deep. I had to be with that for a minute. And then at this point, I've got how many kids? Let me see. Eddie went, so it's at least Eddie and Alex. I'm not sure Lily was born yet. It might have been just Eddie and Alex. I got two kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay, let me see if I can cover. So I call my
people to call their people,
and he says, you know, Chuck would like to cover. I know the part.
Hello.
I created it. and they say, okay, fine. And so I, that was a piece of Eating Crow that still sticks a bit. But, you know, when I think about, you know, it's all perspective. It's all perspective. Because, you know, I'm getting paid to play Let's Pretend. And my father certainly had many things happen on his job that were far worse than that. So it's all perspective. So I understudy. And, gosh, what happened? The first thing happened was they moved the set from San Diego to New York. Someone didn't measure something. The set is 6 to 8 feet too big for the theater that we go into. Oh. So
and now you're like, can watch everything happen?
Yeah,
because you're the understudy, so right. You're like observing the shenanigans.
Totally, which is kind of the best thing, you know.
Okay, the set's too big.
Right. Set's too big. So to solve this problem...
No good.
The set, there's the portion of the set that is too big is like an elevator. And scenes happen in the elevator that people could see in San Diego, but no longer can see because the fucking elevator's in the wings. So they install cameras on the set in the elevator set scene and put TV screens on the proscenium.
Yes.
And don't you know, they had folks coming up in there playing Broadway places to watch TV.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, they did.
What?
If you don't know the play, the elevator's pretty pivotal.
Yes.
To what goes on.
That was the solution. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. True story.
You watched it on a monitor.
True story. If I'm lying, I'm flying. Yeah, man. So they had the TV monitors and people watched the elevator scenes on TV. And if that wasn't bad enough, so and then one night, this was hilarious. I was up in my dressing room. I did not witness this. I only heard this over the squawk box. And witnessed the fallout afterwards. Oh, but at the end of the first act, John Rubenstein, who plays the doctor, the shrink. The premise is he's a shrink and his patients are the seven deadly sins, or they're all the seven deadly sins. That he adds it. And he's the shrink. And he, over the course of the first act, he just gets tired of these whiny, crazy people. And in a fantasy, at the end of the first act, he's supposed to take out, unbeknownst to the audience that it's a fantasy, takes out a revolver and shoots them all. They're all on stage, and he just shoots them all. Well, one night, the revolver didn't work. So John Rubenstein ran around the stage strangling everybody.
They waited for it,
you know. Some would feign running from him, you know. By the time he got to Candace Chappelle, she just fainted dead away.
Strangled
them. That's genius.
It's taking forever, too.
Oh, my God. We're on the squawk box. Like, we're listening to the show. Like, that's not the show. Wait a minute. Whoa. What happened? Whoa.
You know that moment when, like, you know something changes on the show. And it's like the record
rhythm
stops.
Yeah. It's like, you know, something's wrong with the world. You know?
Yeah, it feels that way.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, man.
But this show doesn't run very long, though. So, in and out, right?
Yeah. What's that?
In and out.
Yeah. It was not a hit.
It was like 5 minutes. I mean, it was slam bam, thank you, ma'am.
Now, we think this is very cool on your resume. So you do understudy, cover, then featured an Antonio Award.
How about that?
Like, bam. I mean, you had been working. I'm fascinated by this as well because The Life didn't just start in 97. Mm-hmm. It started in 1990 off Broadway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, that's quite a gestation period for a piece.
No kidding.
So you auditioned for it, and then you had been working on it? Is there...
Auditioned for it?
I mean, before all
when we did it at the West Beth. What year was that? 90,
yeah,
you said?
90, I think, yeah.
It was like 10 years, or almost 10 years. Well, it was 96, 97, so 7 years?
Yeah.
It might... I'm thinking it's a little bit longer than that, but...
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to check that shit out. Whatever. So, 90, we auditioned... Oh, my God. It's a beautiful sunny day. We get, at that time, like, you get the call on our beeper or something. And you
service,
right? So we go down. I'm sitting, it's at West Beth down on down the village, way down on the west side at this warehouse, wonderful thing that Arnold Engelman had put together and made. It was a wonderful space. Is it still there? Do you know?
I don't know.
That I don't know.
Anyway, it was Arnold Engelman's space, and he was key to this whole journey. But anyway, I'm sitting there with Lilias White and Pamela Isaacs, as I recall. There may have been other folks there. And we're sitting there, and we kind of got our lips poked out. Because we're down there, and we're like, these white people got us down here in the middle of nowhere playing pimps and whores. The fuck is that about?
Right? Yeah.
What the fuck they know about some pimps and some whores and why we got to be pimps and whores? And so we dealt with that for a minute. And then, you know, as we all going around. Now, Lil had done Barnum with Cy.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't audition, really, I don't think. She was just, like, hanging out or something. Or...
I know. He loved her. I mean, he loved her.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's not to love?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I go in. I'm by myself. I go in. I sing for Cy Coleman and Joe Layton.
Right, who was the original director.
Yeah. And Cy comes up. He goes, and Cy comes up and moves the guy off the piano. And plays, I think it was like Don't Take Much. He says, just sing a little bit of this for me. He says, and he's, he works it out. And so Cy's playing for me. And I'll never forget looking down at Cy's hands, because he has these stubby little hands and these little fingers, short fingers. I'm like, how is the sound coming out of this piano with those hands? And so I sing the thing that he taught me, and I get the gig. And it was amazing. I'm there, you know, first of all, Lilias White, Pamela Isaacs. It's a really huge loss that right after that show, Pamela Isaacs went away, because, oh my God, actress, singer, extraordinaire.
Just yeah. An
amazing, amazing instrument.
Yeah.
She had.
Yeah.
And you know, we all know Miss Lilias White.
Yeah.
And so we did this thing down at Westbeth, and it was they liked it a lot. They had some problems, you know, we had to tweak it and whatever. And we all got to know each other, okay? And got to know Cy, Cy got to know us and Joe. Cy Coleman stayed with Sharon Washington, Lilias White, and Pamela Isaacs and myself through 7 or 8 years and a different director, from Joe Layton to Michael Blakemore. Cy Coleman always called, when he was doing a backers audition, he would always call us up, ask us if we would do it. He always paid us.
Wow.
And you know, it got to be, we were like, oh, this shit ain't happening. If Zach Holman can't get a show up, then it ain't happening, right?
It was, yeah.
It was. You know, Mr. City of Angels, Mr., you know,
yeah,
exactly. Barnum, blah, blah, blah.
Sweet Charity.
Yeah. Right. Sweet Charity. So we just went, okay, well, if they want to pay us to go sing these songs, and they were great songs. And, you know, so the longer you sing a song, the more you own it, the more, you know. So we've been singing those songs for 7 years before we went to Broadway. So, you know, listening to Lilias White sing The Oldest Profession, I have heard her sing that song a lot, okay? A lot. I have never heard her sing it the same way twice.
Huh.
And it has always gotten better every time I've heard it.
That's
And she just got it like that. And, oh, my God. I was freaked out. I was freaked out because I had to sing after her. Her song, her big number, well, one of her big numbers. She had many.
Yeah.
But that one came really, I enter on the heels of that song. When the applause dies enough, I enter. And so having to sing after her was like, oh, my God. Well,
but singing
it was,
did.
Again, it was good training. You know, it was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I got some shit.
That's right. What was that Tony Awards experience like? How
that was that?
That
was awesome.
Was
okay.
That your first Tony Awards going to, you know,
oh, yeah.
Well, obviously performing, but like.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally my first. Okay, here's how it was. I wasn't really paying attention as I've told you before, I was doing. The show was up. Everybody knew it was May. You know, everybody knew Tony Awards come out. I know this now. I didn't know this then. I didn't pay any attention. We just happened to be recording the cast album the day the nominations came out. So I get up. I, you know, get to work. I don't know. We had like an early call, 10 o'clock something to record the cast album, the door opens on the elevator, and everyone looks up and like this gasp in the company. And what the fuck is wrong with y'all? And they say, you got nominated. I'm like, what? I got nominated for a Tony. Because, oh yeah, I'm on Broadway. Every God. You can get nominated for a Tony when you're on Broadway.
Yeah.
And it happened to me. It fucking happened to me. Okay? And, wow. So, So now we're on Broadway. You know, just got divorced. Like all this stuff. My mother died. All this crazy stuff was going on at the same time. And so it was wonderful, and it was horrible, and it was wonderful, and it was horrible. And anyway, Night of the Tonys comes. who do I take to the Tonys? Okay, I'm seeing a lady. I'd live with my ex-wife for a million years, 14 years. Who do I sit next to me while I sit there and get my Tony? My father was in town. Who do I go to the Tonys with? So I decide I'm going to take my son. I took my son, Eddie. And my son, Eddie, and I sat there in, I don't know, fourth row Radio City Music Hall. And that was so cool. My father was up in the balcony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my father saw me win a Tony.
That's like, it was beautiful.
Yeah, man. And my son. And my other two kids who were watching at home.
Yeah, it's time. Carolina Change. Carolina Change has got to be one of my favorite musicals.
No kidding.
Yeah, and for real, I saw it off Broadway at the Public, which you were in. I never got to see it on Broadway because I was on tour with Les Mis at the time, but I saw it at the Amundsen, which you came in to do.
Right.
How did that get into your orbit? What was that experience like? And I'd love to hear a little bit about Janine Tesori.
Oh, my Janine.
Yeah. Because you put your mark on that role. I mean, is all you.
Well, thank you. That's Janine and George and
I mean,
Tony.
You could tell it was a collaborative effort. I mean, like the...
Yeah. Okay, when do you get to work with George Wolfe,
right.
Tony Kushner, and Janine Tesori?
On a musical. I mean, like... Yeah. But that feels like a play, really.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, like yeah. Right. Well, it is. It's a sung through opera is what it is.
I agree.
It is like... was a sea change, a movement, an unflowering of the American musical.
Agreed.
I remember George saying to Janine that the dryer had to be. He said, you know, just whatever we had needed to be expanded or loosened up a bit or something. And Janine, you know, in her amazing way, went back and changed something or other, and in my head it just went ding, oh, and it became what it was. And the same is true for The President Is Dead. I remember sitting at the piano. I love sitting at the piano with composers. I got to sit with Cy and get to sit with Janine. And
why?
And because they're so intimate with the music,
yeah.
And how they play the music, Oscar tells you something about it, and how they sing it.
Yeah,
you know, many of them don't have great voices, but it's so important to listen to how they sing it.
Yeah.
And so I would sit with her, and we'd sculpt it out, and it was she hung it on me,
and she would like what you were giving her. She'd be like, "Oh, let's
do
a little of this."
Yeah. You know, like a phrase like, drifting driverless, moving slow.
Yes.
I remember the day we discovered that. We're sitting, she said, drifting driverless, moving slow, or something. And I said, drifting driverless, moving slow. And we were like, yeah.
Oh,
that's good.
dream to dream of days to come where sponsorship is high and money is forthcoming.
That's beautiful, Kevin.
I really added a voice onto that one, too. I really was trying to go for something there.
Listeners, we love creating this podcast, but it does cost money. Please don't make me sell my Angel record.
Oh, my gosh, the original cast recording of Angel.
That, like, nobody has.
Nobody has it.
If you like what we are doing and want us to keep doing more of it, please head over to patreon.com.
What?
That's patreon.com.
Patreon.
Patreon.
Yeah,
Patreon.
Rion.
Patreon.
Yeah, and once you're there, search for Behind the Curtain Broadway's Living Legends. And of course, we don't expect to give without receiving some great rewards.
Such rewards include behind-the-scenes videos, shout-outs on future episodes, or episodes, depending on what part of the country you're from, because I said episodes, and early access to some of our podcasts. Hell, for the right price, Kevin and I will come to your apartment and act out all of Agnes of God.
So head over, friends, to patreon.com to help us out.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.